pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please, somebody.
Conklin?
Here.
Grunch?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Page? Solomon? Quorum present?
I'll make a motion to excuse Sally. Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Moving on to the consent agenda. The purpose of the consent agenda is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one commission motion without discussion. Any member of the commission, staff, or the public may ask that any item on the consent agenda be removed and placed as the last item under new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. Item A, approval of the November 6th City Commission special meeting minutes as presented. Item B, approval of the November 12th City Commission audit work session minutes as presented. Item C, approval of the November 12th City Commission regular meeting minutes. D, approval of the recommendation from the Boynton City Historic District Commission to accept the resignation of Jeff Wellman from the board. E, approval of the recommendation from the Boynton City Historic District Commission to reappoint Chris Bandy for a two-year term expiring November 30th, 2021. Item F, approval of the recommendation from the Boynton City Historic District Commission to reappoint Jerry Craigenbrink for a one-year term expiring November 30th, 2020. G, approval of the recommendation from the Planning Commission to appoint Nicole Moblo to fill the vacancy on the Planning Commission with the term expiring May 31, 2022. H, approval of a purchase order contract with the Harbor Fence Company for the repairs to softball field fencing at Rosa Park in an amount not to exceed $2,407 and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. And I, approval to change the start time of our December 10th, 2019 regular meeting to noon.
Mr. Mayor, I would like to move item G and I to new business. Other than that, I'd make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Mayor did it down. Okay. At this time, any citizens' comments on non-agenda items? Move on to correspondence. Anything, Mike?
No, sir.
And city manager's report.
Few items, kind of as the construction season continues to wind down. The Terrace Street reconstruction project is pretty much wrapped up until spring. The last major thing that they did yet this fall was the replacement of all the service lines has now been, of the ones that needed to be replaced, has now been completed. The pavilion project continues to move forward. You may have noticed the new fence up around the new concrete floor areas east of the building. Those have been installed and will be curing for a couple weeks before the building on top of them begins. More interior work is continuing and new mechanical rooftop units will be appearing soon. The Boyne Valley Trail project continues to work on the boardwalk section out at Boyne Mountain. And we've submitted a final reimbursement request to the MEDC for the Boyne's Mountain Force Main project after paying the contractor his final payment earlier this week. We received, and we have here, if you want to take a look at them or later, annual reports for Grandview and the Charlevoix County Community Foundation. Speaking of the Community Foundation, we were advised earlier this week that we received a grant for $2,500 to help with the creation of the new agility section of the dog park. Congratulations to Barbara Brooks for putting together another successful grant application. This week marks a milestone in Boyne City's history with the 50th anniversary of the closing of the tannery and what I would think of as probably the rebirth of the city of Boyne City. According to a Grand Rapids Press article of that period, the plant closed 2 days after Thanksgiving, which would have made it November 28, 1969. The plant's 1 o'clock whistle blew for the last time that day, and I do have a copy of that article. It was too many pages, so I didn't make copies for everybody, but if you're interested, I've got one here. Thanks for Patrick McCleary for helping find that article. Speaking of transitions, we are now in the process of advertising for a new deputy treasurer's position, with Michelle Hewitt's announcement of her pending retirement coming this March after 33 years of service to the city and its citizens. Applications are due by Monday, January 6th. And I've got a couple of copies of the posting that we'll be doing for that. By the end of the day tomorrow, Water Wastewater Department personnel will have completed the winterization of all the city's fire hydrants. A reminder that the special pre-Thanksgiving farmers market will be held downstairs here tomorrow from 9 o'clock in the morning until noon. I and a good deal of the City Hall staff will be out of the office tomorrow, but we will be open for our regular hours. The Santa Parade and Holiday Open House will be held this Friday, November 29th. The open house runs from 5 to 9 p.m., with the parade starting at 6 p.m. The Heritage Center, there's a couple items that are moving forward on that in the last couple of weeks. We now have new temporary lights installed in that area, so they can actually see things in there. There will be a volunteer coming in next week to paint the room and the ceiling. It'll be a flat black to kind of make it a blank tablet area. And they set up an Amazon Smile link that will help if you're doing purchasing on Amazon to make a contribution to their account. And I'll forward the commissioners a copy of that link in case you're interested in using that during any of your non-local holiday shopping. And I hope everybody has a safe and happy Thanksgiving. And we have a couple special presentations to be made at this point.
Scott? Well, unfortunately, just one person was able to come. Mayor, we recently had a transition in the Planning Commission. Joe St. Dennis, leaving us, please come up, left us after 29 years of service to the Planning Commission. During that time, there was considerable transition in our city, and I think a lot of that goes to the Planning Commission's work and efforts. And Joe, specifically, I think in your efforts, you've always been a calming influence to the Planning Commission, and we have some very contentious meetings sometimes, and we appreciate that. And then over the last 14 years that I was able to work with you, I really appreciate your impact and your contributions to the city. And considering this as a volunteer board, that even speaks more to your commitment to the city, and you really owe your brother that. Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Joe. Any words of wisdom?
Your response was enjoyable. There were times you and I disagreed. Times later on, I went, okay, he was right.
and vice versa.
Okay.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Did you want to mention the other one at this point, or we'll do a presentation at a later time?
We'll do a separate presentation for George. He did come. I think he's still at there.
We've been trumped. unless there's something, I don't know if the commission has any questions for me on these or other items, but I did have one more item after taking any questions. Which is, Nadine had something.
Yeah, I was just curious, how many water service lines did you have to replace?
12.
12,
yes.
Is that kind of more or less than you might have just?
Maybe a little bit less. I think there were about 42 lines altogether that we basically checked out each one of them and found 12 that were in need of replacement.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Okay, after much ado and reconfigurations and things of that nature, we're going to see if something actually works.
Each one has its own remote, so.
There we go.
Hang on a second. There's one.
No, we gotta do a little bit of something first. There's one.
All different remotes.
Yeah, we'll work on that next. So this is a system we've been talking about for quite some time, and one of the concepts for this building. The part that we've been waiting for just arrived yesterday, and our IT facilitator, Mark Korbeiser, was here this morning installing it. So if it's a little rough, forgive us on that. We have the ability to connect up to 8 monitors at a time. So the one in the Parkview room is currently configured. If we have an overflow crowd, we can have them watching the same presentation. And if it's an audio-visual presentation, they can watch it at the same time as well, too. This will be able to be used from anybody's wireless system that is here using the facility. It's supposed to be both PC and Apple-friendly and a wireless connection. They don't have to add any install any software or anything to their programs. They all see the same thing at the same time, though. So it's one thing that broadcasts to, up to 8 locations. At this time, we've only bought the devices that connect to each TV that will do up to 6. So again, one more in the Parkview room, and we have another one that will be a floater as well, too. So we'll give it a shot, and we'll learn it.
It is nice, although maybe it still need to use this Zoom on your computer.
Yes, that's something that we'll be working with. Again, this is the
first time.
Yep, he set this up and gave it to me for the first time to start about 11:30 today. So we'll do a lot of experimenting. Yes, I did.
You still think about a sound system?
We've been contacted by the company that provide us the demonstration one, and I'm looking to see, probably won't be until the new year now, just to see if there's other more economical options with that one as well versus the $25,000 price tag that they had for that. So.
And these are all cost covered under the bond, right? The $242,000
yes.
Or whatever.
That is correct. Yes.
And as I think we talked about before, the microphones seem to help when there's a big crowd, because we've heard complaints that, you know, if they're in the back row or if there's 70 people in this room, they can't hear all of us.
Yeah. And I've heard from some of our board and commission members as well, too, it helps them with regards to their ability to hear what's going on at the meeting from the other board members and from the members of the audience as well, too. So that's something we'll continue to investigate and report back to. So that concludes my report.
All right, thank you. Moving on to reports of officers, boards, and standing committees. We have a financial statement from Cindy. Any questions? Okay, moving on to, we have no old business. Moving on to new business, Franklin Street Storm Sewer and Resurfacing Project. Yep.
Thank you, Mayor. As the Commission's aware, earlier this year we budgeted to have our outside consultancy C2AE, assist us with preparing drawings and specifications for next year's construction projects. That way we won't be as pressed come early in the year to get our work out. We should go to the bid early in 2020 and get favorable pricing for the construction of both this project and the Pine Street project, which the commission approved at our last meeting. So this work would involve the construction of a new storm sewer along Franklin Street from its easterly terminus in behind the Litzenberger building out to Park, then south along Park in the West Boulevard down to Morgan, and then along Morgan along the south side of the boulevard over to South Lake Street, where it would tie into the existing storm sewer system. So the map that's up on the screen depicts that route in the darker red line. Along that way, we would pick up some additional storm drainage from a couple of new catch basins that we would add to help alleviate some of the other street drainage issues. There are no storm sewers in this area currently, and we receive a number of complaints, especially during the spring and winter, regarding flooding in this area. So, with that, C2AE has done an opinion of cost of the actual construction at $159,600 to be budgeted for in next year's budget. And the cost of their services would be $14,900. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any comments from anyone other in the audience? Staff? Yes, Mike.
As most of the commission may know, that there really isn't any storm drainage on Park Street, basically from the Division Street south until you hit Pine Street. The water is basically directed along the edge of the road. There's some tip-up blacktop curbs along the way and things of that nature. One that really, as Tim mentioned, that really brought this to our attention was a reoccurring flooding problem at the near the east end of Franklin, in this section here off of Park Street, where there's a low spot that gets flooded as the water works its way south, basically flowing down from Litzenberg down Park Street, and then basically turns the corner. The closest storm drain in this area that is downgrade from this is on Lake Street itself, on South Lake Street. You can see the red line over there as well, too. We originally looked and had C2AE see if it was possible to connect directly, just going due west on Franklin Street until the Lake Street area. And that would have solved the immediate problem that we had on Franklin Street. But then we also asked C2AE to see what it would take and what would be possible to go another block south, north on Park Street to Morgan, so we can pick up both the Franklin intersection and that low spot on Franklin, and Morgan as well too. And they came back with the cost estimate that you have in your packet, which is almost identical in cost, even though we're able to pick up another block or so with storm drainage. So we thought this was the preferred option. It will ultimately tie into the South Lake storm sewer. Storm sewer, and make its way down to Lake Charlevoix. We have talked to C2AE when installing these structures along this line, similar to what we did on Cedar and Terrace, where they would have some ability to drain some of the water, some of the first flushes into the ground at those locations, so we wouldn't be transporting all this water to the lake. So kind of consistent with our efforts to try and preserve the waterfront. So again, this will address an immediate problem, and I think also provide some additional relief for not only these two blocks of South Park Street, but we won't have this water that will be captured by the system continuing to try and find someplace else to go where there isn't much of any place. So I support Tim's recommendation.
Thank you. Any more comments? Let's go to board deliberation, Ron.
Question in regards to the west side of Park Street. Are you going to have to make a road cut there? I mean,
there would be three road cuts, actually, the way it's depicted right now. There would be a road cut on the south side of the intersection of Park and Franklin, then a road cut crossing Franklin to go north along Park Street. Then we would have one other road cut when we cross Lake Street. There'd be a small cut just for a catch basin lead at Morgan and Park, but the three main cuts would be two at the intersection of Park and Franklin, and then one at Morgan and South Lake.
So is Park Street, in regards to the FASA report, how much time, future time is possible before that's going to have to be crushed and reshaped?
The pavement is in pretty decent condition along Park Street, unlike Franklin. Franklin's not in as good a condition, so it would be the priority at this point. The trench, it's only a 12-inch wide storm sewer, 12-inch diameter storm sewer, so the trench would be relatively narrow as we cross any one of these streets. So it's a relatively minor patch in comparison to doing like a full pavement repair.
So it's only about a 12-inch cut?
It's probably a 24-inch by the time there's some allowance for the outside of the pipe area. It's probably a 2-foot-wide cut across the pavement in two locations there, and then on the diagonal up at some point.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm pleased at continuing efforts to intercept at least some of the storm water and try to infiltrate it before it gets to Lake Shallowmoyne.
You?
So, Tim, will Park Street be repaved?
Not under this plan. We would only rehabilitate the pavement on Franklin.
So how are you able to direct the water then if there's no curbs or gutters or anything like that and the road isn't... Does it just move by gravity downhill? Is that...
There's a few low points in particular at the intersection of Morgan and Park where they've shown that catch basin on the southeast corner of the intersection. There's an existing low point there. And then when we go through the process of redoing that pavement, whether it's a millimeter surface or a crushing shape or a total reconstruction, then we can adjust the grades to make it work. This storm sewer would allow the future ability to connect more catch basins if we needed to.
So if the Housing Commission developed that property further to the east, this would be able to accommodate that?
Subject to a hydraulic analysis, yes.
That's all.
Yeah, I'm going to tie in with what Hugh said. So you're basically putting the excavation would be between the sidewalk and the pavement?
Yes.
Okay. And it's just gravity fed. That's what he was referring to. It's just it takes care of itself, okay. And then my last comment would be just this project and the one near the Presbyterian Church are both kind of almost repairs or situations that came up that we have to take care of compared to, let's say, Terrace and Lincoln, where we designed it 4 years out. And, you know, how do you balance that? I guess that's my question. How do you balance spending money on a repair, which bumps maybe a renovation project back down the timeline?
Yeah, well, that's the challenge in particular, probably more so with Pine than with this one. It's difficult to balance, the needs of repairs and corrective work with preventative work. We have budget for both and anticipate having budget for doing both yet in 2020. So the scope of the projects in 2020 would not just include these two projects. I would hope to do some additional preventative maintenance on the road system as well. We would not need C2AE's assistance with those projects, as they would probably be either simple mill and replace or crush and shapes, which I would just design myself.
Thank you. Any more discussion? Yes, Mike?
Well, obviously, we're bringing this and the matter we brought to you at the last city commission for design work with the anticipation that we'll willing to include these in our budget recommendations to the city commission for the next fiscal year. Whether we go forward with them or not will be a discussion of our priorities at that time. Having the plans in place, whether we do them this coming fiscal year or 2 or 3 years down the road, the plans will still be good. We might have to update the cost estimates. At this point, staff believes these are two projects, relatively small projects that we'll be able to fit in to our budget. But again, we'll have further discussions about these projects and all our priorities when we go through the budget process. And if we decide that something else outranks these, we can put these on the shelf for a year or two.
All right. If there's no further discussion, I would look for a motion.
I'll make a motion that the City Commission award a contract to design services for Franklin Street Storm Sewer and Resurfacing Project to C2A at Gaylord in the amount not to exceed $14,900 for the proposal dated November 21st, 2019. Further, I recommend the City Manager execute the document.
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Salomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, thank you. We'll get on to the Field Brewer purchase recommendation.
Okay. Yes, thank you, Mayor. The Commission is aware that we made a substantial investment in new surfaces for two of the five fields out of Rotary Park this year. Our two main softball fields were reconditioned, if you will, with some what's called Washington ball mix. It's a clay mix used for improving the playability of those fields and definitely to improve with drainage and the ability to play on those fields faster after rains. What that requires is some additional equipment. We have a drag groomer at that location currently. It's very old. It's not in very good condition and it needs to be replaced. So I have tasked the staff with figuring out what the best recommendation was to replace that existing drag groomer, and they looked up a few different alternatives and then spoke with the City of East Jordan's Parks and Rec Director regarding a unit that they purchased about 3 years ago, which they've been very satisfied with. They had experimented with other less expensive groomers, really just kind of like, nails in a board that you pull behind the tractor to try and work up the material, and those just don't last, and they don't groom the field surface to a quality of level that the users are expecting today. So that means a lot of additional manual grooming that needs to be done. Whereas a good drag groomer will accomplish that, and these units should last a long time. The director talked to me this morning about it. Actually, this is a photograph of it. They have had no repairs in the first 3 years on this unit at all. He would anticipate a useful life of probably 10 to 15 years on this unit based on the quality of its construction. We also did look at pricing on another unit. Since I submitted the report to Mike last week, that unit, the base price for a similar piece of equipment except the finished room, which is not shown in this picture, is over $6,000. So it's another probably in the order of $1,500 or $1,700 more than this unit. And based on the very favorable recommendation that we got from East Jordan, and what we've been able to look at online regarding this unit, our recommendation would be to purchase this one. The last thing I would note is it has the ability to be towed behind Our gator, which was purchased a couple of years ago, like a year and a half ago, has just a regular hitch, or it can be pulled behind a device that has a three-point tractor hitch, or a mower, a large mower, that has just a standard, you know, pin and cotter pin hitch. So it's got multiple options of how you can pull this thing around. And I think with the right training and instruction, we can train some of the users that would do the grooming on a regular basis how to use it properly and not damage the unit.
Thank you. Any comments from the audience? Go to board deliberation. Dean?
I think you might answer my question. You know, I was wondering whether this use of this would require substantially more staff time. I hear you saying that users might be able to use it as well.
Yes, and that's actually the same model that East Jordan uses. Is they when they provide it to a user group, they do like a one-hour training with the new user. They observe how they operate it and give them some pointers, and then kind of go through what the proper maintenance procedures are for it. So that would be a down-the-road task for us to accomplish.
So, Tim, would those user groups be the high school team and Little League, or who are the user groups?
Yeah, it would be the high school staff do the majority of the grooming. It was Wade previously. I think it's Jeremy now is the new guy. So I haven't met him yet, but we'll go over that with him in the spring if the commission agrees to go forward with this. And then we have some other outside user groups beyond Little League, including the Northmen. They've done a fair bit of grooming up at Rotary Park over the past year on the older A and B fields. And they definitely have an interest in this particular unit and support purchasing this unit. So they've even talked with our staff on that.
Does it have, can we use it in the winter? Can we groom the trails?
not this unit.
Not this unit?
No. Nor the beaches.
I was hoping that we had some crossover there. And there was talk also of splitting the cost between of the Diamond Dust and I would assume this project too, between the three user groups, Little League, school, and the city. Is that still under consideration?
I'd say it's still on the table. We haven't sat down and talked formally about that yet. But I do know that Little League had some money and were willing to contribute some money to overall improvements at Rotary and at this field. But we haven't talked any specifics about capital.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, that does raise a question. Tim, could it be used like up at Avalanche on the sledding hill now where the grass is really tall and to just knock that down so it's, you know, it doesn't get mowed? Is that a use for it? Or?
I don't think so. I think it's more to be operated on a level surface where you're just working 2 to 3 inches maximum of, you know, fairly fine graded soil.
Entertain a motion.
I'll move to issue a purchase order contract with ABI Attachments Incorporated for the purchase of a Rasco MVP infield groomer in amount not to exceed $4,795.94 and authorize the city manager to execute the documents.
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Grunge?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Salomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Let's move on to item C, paint or plow contest.
Thank you, Mayor. So we're not always boring, just building and fixing things in public works. Sometimes there's some creative opportunities that we explore. And this is something that we've been talking about for a good part of this year, about an idea of joining what I call the paint or plow, or paint the plow, that's got a couple different names around the country, program where in order to raise awareness of public works and the importance that or the importance of the services that we provide to the community, a number of road agencies have taken old plows and even in some cases taken plows that are in service on trucks and worked out plans or contests usually with high school or middle school kids to you know, have a design competition and then actually physically come out and paint a plow one day. So what I've seen, you know, the two most popular programs are kind of a mesh between the STEM kids, science, technology, engineering, and math kids, and the artistic kids, in, you know, coming up with a design that would actually work, because the canvas that you're painting on here is not just a piece of flat steel. It's curved, and it's also, it's a 3D curve. It's not just a kind of a straight, consistent shape that you're painting on. So this is a great photo of one that they did in, this is not Kent County, Michigan, but that some students painted on a similar plow to the one that we have over at Public Works. And then we would use it on an annual basis to have a competition to, you know, come up with a design and then promote not only the importance of the service we provide, but also the importance of safety, so that kids at a young age, as they're, you know, coming into their driving years, would know that, you know, you need to maintain a certain distance from plows, and these plow things are big and dangerous, and things that you should respect when you're driving. So it's done a lot to promote both those things across the country, and I think it's a fun thing that we can do to maybe even encourage somebody to take up a career in public works one day, and at the very least understand the importance of the services that we provide. So we have not approached the school district yet on it, but we wanted to get the city commission's blessing before we take that next step. And with your approval tonight, we would begin those discussions and figure out the best approach to getting us to a design sometime during the winter, so that the plow could be painted, you know, probably in the late spring before the kids leave, and then be ready for display during the summer. We did kind of this mock-up where we just set the old plow out there for now so you could see our thoughts of where we might place it. Once it was painted, we would landscape around it so it looks good year-round. But the plow would be proudly on display for everybody to see when they drive into Public Works.
Thank you. Any comments from staff or the public? All right, we'll move forward to the resolution. You?
I think it's a great idea. Yeah. Good for you, Tim.
Thank you.
I like the idea and really support it, too. Got a question though, is there something creative we could do with those castings? There are these cement casting, metal.
Yeah, the creative thought we have is to actually crush the ones that are no longer any good and to use them as fill material where needed, possibly along the shoreline as an alternative to actually purchasing rubble. So that would be material that's below ground, not that's actually physically visible to the public. And then the good material we will eventually use.
Hey, sorry. Did we break it?
All seven?
You're thinking. That's what I'm thinking. They ought to go.
All right. I'm in favor of the painting of the plow.
Did you watch a chance?
Oh, I'm sorry. David? Yes.
That's a great idea. Who are the judges?
It varies. You know, sometimes they actually will have somebody within the school be the judge, or sometimes they'll have elected officials, city managers, whoever, you know, actually serve as the judge. But those are the kind of details that we would work out with the school staff.
That's great. It isn't, and I think you said that this is like every year there'd be like a new design on it.
Yes. That would be the intent.
Great. Excellent.
What's that?
Okay. Well, I would make a motion that we authorize the city staff to work with the Boyne City Public Schools to implement a Paint Our Plow program starting in 2020.
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Salomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye. Aye.
Grunsch?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Moving on to item D, the calendar for 2020.
The Open Meetings Act requires us to formally adopt a meeting schedule for the following year. And we have presented to you just our normal schedule. The first meeting would be the second Tuesday, at it would be a 7 p.m. meeting. The second meeting of the month would be a noon meeting, and that's on the fourth Tuesday. We're a little challenged this year with March 10th. March 10th is a presidential primary, and I anticipate that's going to be a really busy time for us here. So what we're asking is a little bit of a variation on this, and moving the March meetings to the third being the 7 p.m. meeting, the 17th being the noon meeting. Also, the other meeting we're looking at, traditionally we don't have a meeting at the fourth Tuesday of December due to the holidays. We could, however, call a special meeting if needed, as always. So that's the first part. The second part of this is, I also presented the fiscal year 2021 tentative budget schedule, and that takes into consideration those meeting date changes in March that we're requesting, along with that same election, board review on the 9th and 11th of March, MML board meeting, and also Capitol Conference, and then Michelle's retiring on the 12th. So that's going to be a pretty active time for us. So we're asking for these changes, along with approving the regular schedule.
Thank you, Cindy. Any comments?
I have a challenge, schedule challenge with that week of the in March, the week of the 16th to 20th, during the days. And if possible, if we could have a schedule for both our regular meeting and for the budget, all-day budget meeting, and was it during those days, that would be helpful. On the other hand, there's no way around it. No. Yeah, we can figure it out.
The budget overview meeting, oh yeah, that is the 19th, so that is the all-day. Yeah.
Had also identified the 23rd and 26th as possibilities.
So the budget would be presented to us on the 17th?
That's
yes.
Correct.
Tom?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't see any problem with us having, we could have the meeting on the 17th be an evening meeting as well, too. The 19th is an optional meeting. This was the overview that we had for the first time last year. That is not the all-day budget work session.
Got it.
The all-day budget work session is anticipated to be on the 23rd.
Got it.
So whether you want to have a meeting on the 19th is up to the commission. We did one last year. We spent like a couple hours doing that, and we can schedule that in the evening if we wanted to as well, too.
Great.
And then the 26th, which is highlighted there in the, with the green square around it, would be a follow-up after the Capitol Conference, which is on the 24th and 25th in Lansing, in case we needed follow-up at that time. Starting on the 27th of March, you've got a spring break, so we have a lot of people leaving town at that point as well, too.
So the word optional should have been with the Thursday, March 19th meeting.
Correct. Well, both the 19th and the 26th are both optional. Again, 19th, if you want to have another overview, just to kind of have a brief go through of it, and then the 23rd is kind of the slog through it. So I think we can accommodate your work schedule.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We could adopt this and we could adjust it.
Do you know what your shifts are, Dean?
It's just during the day, so after by 5 I'm available.
Okay. Then definitely have the meeting. If we're going to do something on the 17th out of our normal rotation of the noon meeting, I would say that one should be at 7 o'clock. That's our usual meeting time. The one on the 19th, you know, we can start that earlier, like at 5 or 6 or something like that, depending on when you get off for the day, type of thing.
That'd be fine. And ultimately, if it's a challenge, that timing on that day for other members, it is optional. You do record it. I can catch up before our budget, all-day budget meeting on Monday.
Well, part of the discussion we want to have is, do you want to have that meeting again on the 19th?
I thought it was helpful.
Can we do it at 5 on the 19th?
Okay. Yeah, I think last week we spent a couple hours on it or something like that, just to kind of a primer.
So with those adjustments, we could make a motion?
Correct. So what I hear, what I think I'm hearing is the 17th meeting will be 7 p.m., and the 19th meeting will be at 5 p.m., and the rest of the calendar will be adopted as Cindy has proposed.
So moved.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Salomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Brunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Item E, discussion regarding proposed West Michigan to Bowling City Park non-motorized trail routes.
Well, I was very pleased with the meeting that we had last week where we kind of unveiled and publicly had some discussion with regards to the route that was put together by staff working with C2AE. We had full quorums of the City Commission, Planning Commission, and Park Board here. We had a number of residents that were along the route as well, too, which I thought was a great initial discussion. One of the things I'm noticing about this connection is I'm seeing the route on my screen, and you're not seeing it on yours. So, I mean, just for some reason, it seems to want to switch the networks on me. Anyway, I really would like to have that round up there.
There it is, Mike.
Oh, great. Thank you. Yeah, we'll work through that issue, too. Stay with that for now. So we had a good representation, good discussion. One of the initial takeaways I took out of the meeting was that there are some short-term things that we can do as we're working to do an implementation of the entire route with regards to potential lane markings and possible shoulder widenings along the proposed project that we're going to do next year in certain squeeze areas and basically highlighted in the some of the red zones there as part of the projects to basically help speed up what might be a multi-year process. I just wanted to give the commission an opportunity if they had further insights or thoughts that they wanted to share or have a discussion on at this time while it was still fairly fresh in your minds. We're going to be getting hopefully additional feedback from both the Planning Commission and the Park Board after their next meetings as well too.
Commissioners, I'll be glad to start. First of all, I agree with you. I'm happy with the attendance that we did have quorums. We did have a lot of input, and that was awesome. Since then, I've gone by it real slow, and I agree that there are a lot of solutions that we can do. I mean, there's a lot of areas that don't need a lot of work. It's just the sidewalks there, and if you just expanded the sidewalk width, I mean, there's just some things I think we could alleviate just the length. Just every time you shorten that length by making a section more traffic friendly, that's a good thing. So I'm pleased in the direction we're going. I agree that if we could make some of these items that you mentioned feasible this year, you know, within our regular budget, within our regular work session, working progress with the crew, then that's a great thing. Anybody else?
I guess one of the questions I have in my mind is, you know, dealing with MDOT, you know, we talked about going to a 10-foot lane, and the other thing was squeezing, you know, squeezing the center line over. That was shifting the center line. Would we, is that actually feasible that we can do something like that and not be in trouble with the agencies?
The lane markings, I think, would be fairly simple. With regards to relocating the road to the north, as was discussed at the meeting, that I think is pretty problematic and probably unlikely, at least at this phase. That might be something if that was something that we thought we wanted to do, could do in a future phase of the project, but I don't see moving it north to provide, especially in that red zone, some relief on the south side at this point. I don't know if Tim has any further thoughts with regards to that.
Yeah, just add that the rehabilitation that's being planned for next year is, you know, based on about a 7-year life of the pavement. So reconstruction would be, you know, probably required in about 7 to 10 years.
And shifting the location it gets pretty dang complicated because you're basically building a new road in that section that you're shifting it onto, because there is no real base off on those shoulders or towards the sidewalks. So we'll continue to look at that. I would not hold up much hope for that at this point, especially where we are with the plan submittals that we've already had to submit, and that the project is currently out for bids at this time for the West Michigan project. We have a limited time frame to operate on that grant cycle.
I'd like to open it up for discussion from the audience. Mike, I'd like to hear from you.
Well, I would like to encourage those short-term items that you're all discussing right now. I want to make another point on the overall plan, the big heavy cost plan. I think we should work towards a straight line as close to the road trail, separated from the road, as the first step. And those very expensive loops that go through the open space, Veterans Park, and the Bendix property, I think those are all great plans. But I think they belong in a future plan. When we do the open space, we'll include a promenade near the water. When we do the marina and fix up Veterans Park, well, then we'll do the surround through there. But I think to get people off the road and into a safer environment on the big project, we'll have a straight line parallel to the road offset plan. And that's all shown in his plan as an alternative. And I'm just saying that ought to be priority one, with priority two down the road as we fill out these parks and redevelop things. But going back to the subject of the discussion here, I think these shortcut things, we ought to take every advantage we can. None of them are going to be a full trail recognized acceptable, but they're going to be a heck of an improvement and take a lot of pressure off our back. Because the community right now is really concerned about the safety that we have right now with the way we brought people in and out of town on this side. So,
thank you, Mike. Let's keep the discussion going. Yeah. Anybody?
Yeah. Well, I agree, again, of course, with the discussion that we talked about in the shorter term safety improvements. Also, you know, this is this plan is another $1 million project, you know, and at some point, how many $1 million projects can we take on at once? And it would be really helpful, I think, especially with the open space and avalanche planning process going on, for us to get some guidance as the commission from the Planning Commission, Parks Commission, about, you know, the order of things. What's the most important thing for us, or major project for us to take on now? And what's the second one, and so on, so that we're sure that we're taking advantage of those potential funding opportunities that are really reflective of where our priorities are. And I think now is a good time to do that, since these things, all three of these, are sort of fresh in our mind in the security planning process. The other thing that sort of was evident to me in our discussion tonight was that this plan, as it moves forward, assuming we move forward with some variation of this plan,
that is disruptive to residents along the route where we have to put it next to the road, where we put it next to the road as opposed to the shared ones. And I think for us to, you know, sort of take our time and engage those residents, you know, as much as we can, as early as they can, will help, as it did during our meeting, get those concerns out and be able to, early on, be able to start to service more of those and resolve those prior to seeking funding for the longer term project. And then I do think that meeting we had was really good in share those sentiments, that hearing from some residents during that time as well was very helpful.
So Tim, were those flagged where it was surveyed? So those stakes, like that one property where the landscaping is, the stake was on the other side of their landscaping?
That's correct. Most of the landscaping is in the public right-of-way.
So is it there a setback? Is there a setback, the house setback, appropriate for zoning?
I would have to look at the plans when they go to houses.
Okay, because a couple of those houses are going to be really close if we use that whole right-of-way. Well, I, you know, struggle with this because I don't see a real easy solution in the short term, because we can talk about getting people from the park into downtown, but then having them return to the park, say if that's a destination, they're not going to use that same route. They're going to be on the other north side of the street.
Well, why?
Because it's not, unless we have an 8-foot, you know, along the red area, it's not wide enough. You know, if you're going one way, but if you've got traffic coming the other way, and you've got a car there without any kind of barrier, you're... So I was, you know, just, and I know nobody wants to cross the road. That's not the ideal thing. But, you know, what if we came, you know, from West Michigan, created a path to Mechanic, came down Mechanic, and that road's in pretty good shape, from Mechanic to, I think it's Bay Street. Is that right, Mike? Yeah, Bay, and then to John Street. And then you have the intersection there on West Michigan. You know, and have a real prominent crossing there and get people on the other side. Because, again, I'm looking at two different segments of riders. One, riders who are experienced and aren't going to pay attention to the bike path, and they're just going to be in the flow of traffic, versus a family with the children trying to get a safe way into town. So when I talk about a trail, I'm talking about that segment of the population. Families, young kids, being safe. And then if you crossed on West Michigan and then widened the sidewalk as much as you could, so you didn't have to deal with the red section there, just widen the sidewalk, and then you're going to have to kind of create another crossing somewhere there where it drops down the lower lake, which is not a good spot.
That was real problematic with regards to staff. We didn't see any good way to get across there. We spent a lot of time walking that from all different angles. I mean, from a safety perspective, you'd almost be better off taking them, continuing going due east.
And just widen the sidewalk along North Lake Street?
No, I'm talking about doing where the red line stops. When the red line stops here, I'm almost thinking you continue the way this way.
And then down.
Yeah, which I don't think people will use. That'd be the safest route. But yeah, the crossing over by John Street isn't anywhere near as bad because you have some good sight distances there.
Right.
There are no good sight distances there at that flasher, which is, I'm assuming, is one of the reasons there's a flasher there. You have a number of odd intersections coming in. Intersections coming in, you know, kind of cattywampus. It's not just like a regular T or something like that. It's kind of like a spider's legs going in there. And there's just so much to be looking at. I am opposed to doing a crossing at that location.
Yeah,
I don't like using that term, but I mean, I just didn't see a safe way to do it here.
Yeah, we crossed there. My wife and I, it's not there. You know,
I mean, because one of the things that we as a staff looked at was, okay, when you hit at the flat, if you're basically coming from Young State Park and you're traveling east on that section of West Michigan, and you hit the flasher, you know, a lot of times what I'll do when I'm riding back and forth there, I'll ride on the sidewalks. Mm-hmm. And when I hit that, I'll ride on that sidewalk by the old church on the east side of the street. Mm-hmm. But there isn't the width there. I mean, you talk about properties being close to the road right away in that red section. I mean, they're right up there. There is no room for us to expand the path on that side of the street of any significance at that location. Basically, all the way until you get pretty much down until Line Street. It gets a little bit better as you go further south along here, but it is really pretty tight, at least that first half of that block at that location. I mean, that could have kept you on, at least get you past that intersection, but with the flasher, but it just didn't really flow well.
Yeah.
Tim, I got a question for you. So a lot of the area where there's a 5-foot sidewalk, it's probably slope one way or the other. Could you do another 5-foot sidewalk right next to it if it's within the right of way? Slope it the opposite, and so it's cement, it's not blacktop, but it looks, it's pretty defined. You got your coming and going. Seems like the work trouble is the telephone lines, the power poles. That's, I saw so much potential that we can make this work until the hard spots will make a lot of it work, except the cost of removing the, or changing the location of the power poles.
Correct, and I'm not sure that there's 5 feet in a lot of the locations that Mike mentioned. It might be 3.
Okay.
Where it's 3, the sidewalk's not 5, I don't think either. I think the sidewalk might only be 4 feet in some of those locations.
Okay. Usually when there's a sidewalk, the sidewalk closest to the residence or the dwelling or whatever building is there, that's usually butted pretty close to the property line at that location. So, and most of the sidewalk, there really isn't that much of a crown to it or an angle to it. It's pretty flat. If anything, they probably shed towards the road, I would hope. And so either you're going to have to, so if we've got something where there's a house here, you got an existing sidewalk with a little bit of a lip maybe going towards a road over here, you're going to either want to continue that, because if you have it wedge up this way, you're going to have water stuck in the middle. So.
And you don't want to flow it back towards the home.
No. So I think ultimately, the main thing that, I think the thing we really got to focus on is, what is the preferred route, and what's the best way we can do to make that work? And that's the issue we struggled with 2 years ago, too, when we first started talking about this with the commission. And the biggest hurdle at that time was the same intersection with the flasher. I mean, that's the real Achilles heel that we've got here. And I just don't see a safe way to get people north and south on that at that crossing. Unless you signalized it or something like that, but I just think that's going to create all sorts of other issues.
Well, does it have to be a certain width there in order to be grant eligible? I mean, is that the other consideration, that if it's not 10 feet or 8 feet, that it's not going to be eligible for the DNR trust fund grant or whatever we might be applying for?
I think that's something we have to really keep a close eye on with regards to, I mean, Larry, when he was here, was talking about the AASHTO standards with regards to it. And that's what they're generally going to look at for those segments. And I think we have to really be concerned about connectivity. And if we just think that we're going to apply and go for small sections of a trail, I think we're going to have a hard time with that. I think they're going to want to see something that connects from here to there. Or you know, if we've got a gap in the middle, I think that could cause us some problems. So, like from West Michigan, that sidewalk section, and I'm sorry, my computer timed out here. From West Michigan to John Street, that section I think we could do and apply for. It's depending on, because that, could all be made to comply with the standards and things of that nature if we keep it along off the edge of the road with the 10-foot path that we were talking about before, and very few obstacles. And I think we can have a high degree of success for that. That next section, that could cause us some problems for not only that next section, because we might not be able to get the 10 feet or the other standards in there, and or subsequent sections that would have we'd have after that. So I think we have to be real strategic in our grant planning, whether you're talking about a straight line trail or something that's along the waterfront. Because one of my concerns there is, if we apply for any state funding, let's say we're doing that state straight line along the edge of the road, and we apply for state funding for that, I would think, I'd be very skeptical that they're going to come back and apply for additional funding for another trail in close proximity or the boardwalk. And if that's the case, we may not want to just avoid doing the first grant and then just go for funding for the boardwalk, which is going to be the more expensive of the two. So there's all sorts of strategic pieces we have to figure out on this as we get along the way. The first concept is, you know, the meeting that we had, the additional feedback that we're getting today, planning commission, park board, and then come back, roll it all together, maybe have another group discussion and have at least a preliminary concept of where we think the main route's going to go, and then roll that out and have continuing discussions with the community as well, too.
Now, would there be any opportunity to involve residents before coming up with that preferred route? Because I think there's some thought that is from the residents who said, well, you've already decided this, you know.
Yeah, and then we should make sure that it's, you know, a preliminary preferred route or something like that, or
so some options. You
know? Yes. Well, I think it'd be better for us to come up with, to kind of have one of the thought through, and then have a whole bunch of public input at that time as well, too. I want to make sure before, like you say, before we finalize anything or put it down on concrete, that we get more public input.
It would be an opportunity to have something with residents primarily, where you're outlining, just like our discussion today, here's all the challenges we face, what do you think? Because I think even though, you know, we've been having all those discussions, once it's presented, there might be a perception that's already a done deal.
Yeah.
And so it might be engaging our residents more in our thought process prior to having that preferred plan might help those individuals express their concerns and kind of strategize together what the best solutions might be. The other thought I had is, thinking about grant funding, the county is continuing to look to the same funding sources to complete the trail from here to US 31, and wondering if, you know, we're hoping to utilize the same sources effectively, whether it might be difficult. It would be hard to imagine how we could, how they could fund both in a year, or how they'd want to fund one over the other. But, you know, they probably want to finish it would probably score higher to complete the trail outside of town than in town. Has there been discussion about sort of timing of grant applications in the context of that other project?
No, but I would share your comments that I would think the original Boynton City to Charlevoix project that's going through the county would take higher priority over ours. Now, I wouldn't completely dismiss the opportunities to go get multiple sections. I think it would be difficult. I think we would be competing against the same funds. But then again, if we can demonstrate to the state that the big picture is ultimately connectivity between Charlevoix to Boynton Falls and maybe beyond, and we're filling these gaps and have some type of a strategic way that we're lengthening the trail at one end or the other. So, you know, 2 points there. One, with the Boynton City Charlevoix route, we also were able to get funding for the Boynton City to Boynton Falls route. So those things happened pretty much at the same time, maybe a year or so off. And the state funded both of those. But I do think they will be competing against each other to some degree. They have a limited pot to work with,
of course.
And it will be interesting to see under the current governor, whose priorities are a little bit more roads than the previous governor's, if she'll maintain his priority about trails. That was a real hallmark of Governor Snyder's.
Mr. Mayor, can I?
Yes.
From a public safety point of view, is there anything you can add to the discussion? Do you identify that as a real dangerous area coming into town?
It's narrow. I mean, the road already is for vehicle traffic. It seems pretty narrow through there. I have commuted to work on my bike a number of times, and I have come in that way from the trail from Horton Bay. And where it ends at the intersection of West Michigan there and Quincy Road, it's a tough spot. And, you know, I know the signs are for the bike route to go back the other direction and down. And as a biker myself, as a road biker, I don't want to go out of the way. And I know, you know, and I know the town, I know the roads, so I'm gonna take the shortest route, which is the most convenient, and keep my momentum going. But that whole stretch that you guys have been discussing it's a tough area. It is narrow already. It's definitely a complicated issue.
Have there been accidents, bike vehicle accidents there?
Not that I can recall, though. No. The only bike car accident that comes to mind was right at the open space. 4th of July of last year.
I like the idea of like you said, to keep this preliminary so we don't scare any people off. I like the idea of involving the 20 or 30 people that live along there. I like the idea of keeping it all on one side with no rural crossings. And exhaust that first before we do any road crossing. And I like the idea of doing walkthroughs. That two blocks is critical, doing a walkthrough with the homeowners and staff. Kind of all the above. The more we can do, the better.
And striping it differently as it gets redone here this spring.
In the short term,
yeah,
yes.
A little bit extra payment if we can figure that out on the tough spots, yeah.
What direction do we...
There isn't any action that's necessary at this point. We just want to get additional feedback while we've been keeping this as fresh as well, too. Going back to Dan's comments also as well, too. I mean, one of the good things about the route we've got, I'm sorry I can't get it back up at this point, that we have is I think a lot of people recognize it as a difficult section to traverse. I heard from a couple staff members after our last meeting that they have seen people basically get to from like Young State Park to West Michigan and basically just turn around at that point. I think that's helped us with regards to the low number of actual accidents that we have. There's kind of a theory that's out there. And you'll see it in Europe and things like that where they've got mountain roads and they've got no guardrail and people are just super safe and cautious. Where in America, we try and make everything super safe and that kind of makes, in some respects, it has an inverse relationship where it makes things more dangerous because we're kind of just used to safety being built in type of thing. So I think people are on guard, so I think that hopefully will keep accidents hopefully non-existent or at a minimum until we get a better system worked out.
Sounds good. Although you and I gave you differing opinions, so there's no...
Well, I'm not saying that we've come to a conclusion at this point.
Yeah, that's fine.
I mean, there was some
just
things
continue
we should
the discussion, yes.
And again, also keep in mind that at the same time that we're talking about this routing, we're also having the public input process with regards to the open space design. And we may see some elements or some public comments there that will influence some of our decisions as to what we want to see done at that time, and timing and priorities, how these all fit together.
All right.
I would just echo to Dean and your about involving the property owners in the whole planning process. I think it would be good.
Okay. Anything else, Mike?
Okay. Keep going. That's right. Tough, but you're going in the right direction.
All right. Thank you. Let's move on to item G from the consent agenda, was approval of the recommendation of the Planning Commission to appoint Nicole Mogul to fill the vacancy on the Planning Commission with the term expiring on May 31st, 2022.
I don't know her, and her application was very thin, and it wasn't on the Planning Commission agenda, and the minutes weren't done yet. Could you tell us about her?
Yeah, she submitted her application after the Planning Commission packets came home, but we still had an opportunity to add her to the agenda and get the application out to the Planning Commission shortly after that. In talking with her, she is a young lady that works over at the Boyne Medical Facilities, kind of in the medical field. As the Planning Enabling Act has outlined a number of skill sets and professions that it likes to have a varied group in there, and she kind of fit that mold, as we don't have anybody in that kind of profession, and I think she's going to bring a good skill set to the Planning Commission from a fresh perspective.
She did. She was present, and we did have an open interview process, I mean, whatever you call that, three or four questions. So,
That answers my question. I would move to approve her nomination if that's appropriate.
Okay. I think it is, because we answered your question, yes. So, I would, you made the motion then?
Yeah.
Okay. So we need a second. We have a second. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunge?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Moving to item I, which was approval to change the start time of our December 10th, which is coming up at the next meeting, to noon.
Mike, I know you sent an email wondering about that, and I had a thought afterwards. With the 17th having an evening, since we're not going to have a second meeting in December, could just move that to the following Tuesday at 7 o'clock to have an evening meeting, since that'll be the only meeting we have for 6 weeks or so? It was just a thought I was having.
Yeah, let me just bring up my calendar here.
So you're talking about moving from the 10th to the 17th?
Yeah.
I think that's too close to the holidays myself.
Oh. Okay.
I mean, my stress level goes up as the weeks get closer to last minute shopping, so I prefer not to do that.
Well, Mike, you could solve this by just doing your shopping earlier.
No, I couldn't. I'm not wired that way, sorry.
Well, I wonder too, is that typically a time of year that kind of slows down considerably, so may not have as much business that would warrant?
I'm trying to remember if there's been a time where we've needed a second meeting, and maybe there's been once, maybe twice that we've done it, if that. Things usually start to slow down. That doesn't mean that there can't be something that comes up.
Well, this wouldn't be a second meeting. This would be the only meeting.
Correct. Correct.
And you're saying, even though it's the only meeting, you don't anticipate a heavy agenda?
Well, again, not enough to justify a second meeting. And putting it basically a week before Christmas on the 17th, it would not be my recommendation. That's why we're looking at doing it on the 10th. Keeping our regular date, just moving the time.
I just wanted to raise the question.
And you have a conflict of a meeting that night. That's why you're moving it to a new meeting.
Yeah, that's the Boyne Valley Township.
Correct.
Yeah, they scheduled a special public hearing to talk about EMS reorganization. And as I mentioned in my memo to the City Commission, that's up there on the wall. Finally, again. Sorry about that. I think it's important that we have staff there. Some of the commissioners want to attend. I'm following up on that inquiry that you made with regards to the quorum on that view as well, too, to see if I can get more clarification before this. But yeah, it's unfortunate they happen to schedule their special meeting on a topic that's so critical to to us on the same date as our regular meeting. Sure, it was in your record.
So I would make a motion to approve to change the start time of the December 10th meeting to noon.
Second. Okay. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Crunch.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Solomon.
Aye.
Conklin.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Thank you. To go to the order. Commissioner, anything? Kelsey, you have anything? Good. Thank you. Okay, thank you. Announcements. City offices will be closed Thursday, November 28th, and Friday, the 29th, for Thanksgiving. And our next regular commission meeting is scheduled for December 10th at noon. And at 1:21, I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Second. All in favor say aye.